While Space Expands from Dust, written by Black Cat, read by Opal Song. Fandom, Star Wars. Rating, teen. Relationship, Clone Trooper Keely, Mace Windu. Also tagged for Alternate Universe, Canon Divergence. Alternate Universe, Arranged Marriage. Developing Relationship. Mind Control. Sith Planets. Mild Horror. Hurt Comfort. And Womp. Produced for Marianas for ITPE 2023. I'll be back to join you soon, Depa murmurs, pressing her forehead to Mace's. Don't get into trouble while I'm gone, Master. Mace snorts, unimpressed, but he runs a gentle hand over her braids, breathes in her warmth. I'll be all right, Depa. Whatever it takes to save the galaxy from another war is worth the time. Depa doesn't look overly pleased, but she doesn't argue either. Just pulls back and tugs her hood up over her hair. The time, maybe, Master, but this isn't anything the Jedi have done before. Mace raises a brow at her, deliberate and pointed.
Isn't it? I seem to recall an undercover mission to Zeltron that you and Luminara undertook that would beg to differ, Padawan.
There isn't anything in the whole galaxy that can shame Depa, and Mace certainly isn't the exception there. She laughs, a little wicked, as she beams at him. For a while, you almost had two daughters. What a blessing, Master. With a sigh that makes her chuckle, Mace leans in, kisses her forehead.
You're the one who should be staying out of trouble, he tells her, and draws his own hood up.
Depa laughs. I'll try to make sure that the half of the council that volunteers to join us is the half that won't give you headaches, she tells him, ignoring the fact that she's part of the half that does, and keys the ramp down. The door is opening. Mace turns, breathing in the whirl of dark, humid air that smells overwhelmingly of green growth and stagnant water. Everything is gloomy. Flashes of lightning illuminating the horizon, and Mace has never had Yoda's fondness for swamp planets, so this will be interesting, potentially. He thinks, for a moment, of Yoda taking his place in this, and has to contain an inappropriate wash of amusement. It would, technically, have been in compliance with the Order's new charter. No one truly deserves that, though. Mace's boots sink into the mud when he steps down off the ramp, pulling his hood a little further forward to avoid what's either a very heavy mist or a very light rain. When he turns and dips his head to Depa, standing at the top of the ramp, she bows back, then retreats, and a moment later the ramp slides up as the engines rumble to life. A part of Mace wants to watch her lift off, but she'll be returning. And half the council with her. Not quite half the order as well, eventually. This isn't a time for goodbyes. Under the crooked, twisted trees, there's a dark figure waiting, wearing a heavy leather jacket with a deep hood, blasters in clear view strapped to his thighs. Mace raises a brow, but inclines his head as he nears. Omega. Granta gives him a sly smile, all razor edges. Master Windu, of all the sacrifices I expected them to send, I'll admit you're the last.
They must have tightened your leash, Mace says coolly. I would have expected you to know.
Granta's expression twists, but after a moment he rolls his eyes, pushes away from the tree he's leaning on. When he turns and heads into the forest, Mace falls into step with him.
My orders were to separate the Jedi from the Senate, he says blandly.
And I accomplished that nicely, wouldn't you say, Master Windu? There's no need for me to do more. Someone definitely tightened his leash, Mace thinks. Granta assassinated the Chancellor, engineering a vote in the Senate to break ties with the Order, and threatened the entire Republic with war. His actions may have been authorized, but his methods certainly weren't, from what Mace has seen.
I think you've done plenty, he says, flat,
and Granta smiles like it's a joke.
All by the mandate of the Super Commando Army, he says, with a bitter flourish as he bows to the pale figures just emerging from the gloom.
Mace comes to a halt, watching them approach. They're armored even here, and heavily armed. But natural, he supposes, for a people who call themselves an army before anything else. He can see a dozen different colors of paint, but the main one is blue, jewel deep but bright in the light of the storm overhead.
Mandalore, Granta says, and then retreats towards a figure in gray armor, paint like the muzzle of a wolf across his helmet.
The man turns his head, says something quiet, and Granta smirks, only to have the man grab his elbow, tug him in close with a flicker of exasperation. There's no time to focus on their byplay, though, because the foremost man in blue painted armor is stepping forward, a figure in armor bearing red-brown paint at his shoulder. Mace stays where he is as they approach, and when they're close enough, he bows, precise.
Mandalore, he says.
Jedi, the Mandalore says, faintly wary but not alarmed. You came alone.
Arrangements still need to be made to relocate those willing to resettle here, Mace says, and straightens. I'm Mace Windu, Master of the Order.
There's a pause, like the title is surprising. The Mandalore looks at the man in brown, who's frozen and tense, and after a moment, he says,
We were told the head of the Order was shorter.
Mace carefully doesn't let his amusement show. It's not the first time he's dealt with this misunderstanding.
Master Yoda is the Grand Master. Perhaps that's who you're thinking of. It's a position of respect given to the oldest Jedi in residence.
An entertaining amount of relief washes through the man in brown, and Mace clearly isn't the only one who notices. The Mandalore gives him a look, and the man in brown huffs, hooking his hands into his holsters and pointedly glancing away. With a snort, the Mandalore turns his attention back to Mace and says,
I'm Rex. This is Captain Keeley.
Keeley nods shortly, attention sliding back to Mace. He's still a little tense, but grim, too, Mace thinks. The army is the one who arranged all of this, but it's clear it wasn't just for the joy of making the Republic dance to their tune. Mace had had his doubts that was the extent of it, but... The murder of the Chancellor in broad daylight, right after he opposed a vote to separate the Order from the Senate, was a lot to factor in.
Well met. Mace says, bowing.
He has a feeling that he knows precisely why Keeley is here, and a little extra deference won't hurt, even if politics are Mace's least favorite part of the job. Keeley nods once in return, short. We were expecting a bigger transport, he says. More people, and not this soon.
The Senate thought it would be best to get things settled, Mace says.
particularly given the way the sentiment in the Republic is turning against the Jedi? Granta asks. His minder still has a hold on his elbow, but he looks impressively unbothered by it. Mace can't tell whether it's a good sign where the threat of potential violence from these men is concerned, or simply a factor of Granta's personality. I'm surprised they didn't ship the whole order to our doorstep all at once. Mace raises a cool brow. Despite your best efforts, Omega, we're being given time to relocate. 2,000 years of history can't be abandoned so easily. Granta's blue eyes are flinty. Tell me, Master Windu, how many Jedi precisely are settling here? I can't imagine Ossus is a more appealing destination, given that it's a barren wasteland. Tragic, that's all the Senate will allow you after so many centuries, faithfully at their beck and call. Enough, Rex says. Wolf, take him back to the palace. Sir, Wolf says, and he pulls Granta away, back towards the edge of the spires, just visible above the trees. Mace watches them go, not fond of Granta in any manner, after what he's done, but hopefully he isn't in danger of anything except being yelled at. If he's anything like his father, it won't have any sort of lasting impact. There's a moment of silence, and then Rex reaches up, pulls his helmet off. It's still strange, seeing Jango Fett's face beneath the armor, but Mace has sat through enough negotiations the army has with the Senate that it's no longer jarring. Never Rex himself, but enough people to make it a show of force. The Senate was certainly intimidated by it, though Mace isn't feeling charitable enough to think of their reaction as much beyond a spineless surrender at the moment. We'll need numbers, Rex says, and it's steady but cool. Our demand was for half the order here, but none of the numbers we've been given have been precise. We're a monastic order, Mace says, and it's something the Senate has started to forget over the years. The fact that they handed the order over like surrendering a deadly weapon proves that. Our members are free to leave or remain, and we have members who haven't returned to the temple in centuries. Precise numbers are hard to find. Keely and Rex exchange looks, but Mace isn't about to offer excuses for how the order operates. They've existed for thousands of years just as they are, and this is an upheaval, but it isn't the worst they've suffered. All right, Rex says, though he sounds displeased about it. We have several locations for the new temple, but no construction has started yet. You'll be staying at the keep. This way. We need to be undercover by nightfall. The guards wait for Mace to follow Rex and Keely, then fall in around him. And Mace keeps his eyes straight ahead and tries not to feel as though he's being marched straight into a prison. Cold is a good descriptor of every interaction he's had with clones, but he thinks of reaching Palpatine 1 minute too late, the Chancellor dead in the hallway, and Granta grinning at him through bloody teeth before he leapt out the window and disappeared. Thinks of the cruisers that slid into the core, bristling with weapons, and the way the Mandalore had held whole worlds hostage and in terror of invasion until he was given the sector of space he wanted. And then he demanded the order, too. Demanded the order come to Dromund Kaas, once the heart of the Sith Empire. And it's been abandoned for thousands of years now, but it's still a place of darkness and fear. There's a shuttle waiting for them, small and sleek in the same way as the clone armor. And Mace steps into it, catches one of the straps on the wall. It's very clearly a troop transport, dully functional. And Mace remembers his first sight of such a thing, landing right on Coruscant for negotiations. Millions of soldiers, so many millions they could populate a whole planet, all armed and trained and ready to bring the Republic, divided and unawares, to its knees. The order was a small sacrifice in the name of preventing a war, and it's one thing Rex wouldn't waver on. Mace tries not to read an ill omen in that, in the darkness that's sliding in to cover the city like fog as they approach, but the Jedi have been exiled from their temple, sent away, half to Ossus to try and rebuild the ancient temple that Naga Sado destroyed, and half to the darkness here. Mace just hopes that it won't be a darkness they fall into. Kos City is alive with lights for the first time in 5,000 years. Mace saw it on Depa's descent, the glow against the planet's darkness. But there's something jarring seeing it from up close, gliding down the streets that are millennia removed from their last occupants. There are clones working in every corner of the city, dragging it up out of disrepair. Floodlights on and power restored in patches like shafts of sunlight on a cloudy day. Dromund Kos is coming back to life, a lost planet restored, but Mace knows the history of this place. It's hard to find any comfort in that. Welcome to Dromund Kos, where freedom goes to die and legends are forced on the galaxy. Mace doesn't remember who said it, but the record was in a very old holocron, and Yocasta had set it on his desk, along with several dozen other about Dromund Kos, as she carefully, methodically packed up the vastness of the archives. The words had felt ominous at the time. They only feel more so now as they land before the huge, looming shadow of the Imperial Citadel. It's lit all the way up, and Mace can feel the hum of life inside it, though the crest he saw in the old Jedi records has been pulled down, replaced by banners bearing a black mythosaur skull imposed on a golden shield, framed by a stalk of wheat on either side. Not quite the true Mandalorian sigil, Mace thinks, but a deliberate echo of it. It's clear what the clones are modeling themselves after. Knowing what's already happened, knowing the history of other Mandalorian armies, it's hard to find comfort in that, either. Here, Rex says, and leaps out, even though the transport hasn't quite settled. There's no hesitation, and he lands easily, but it's not a thing most people who aren't Jedi would do. Mace marks it, following more sedately. He's in no rush to walk into the former seat of power of the Sith Empire, no matter how much it's been remodeled. Keeley's a little slower, too, and he nods to the soldier who opens the door and then steps down. Rex, he says, and Rex glances back, then nods once, sharp. We'll do it now, before dark, he says. You calmed whoever you need? Just you on my end, Keeley says, and Mace breathes in, fingers curling in the sleeves of his robe. He doesn't say anything, but follows Keeley and Rex across the arching bridge, beneath wide, sweeping wings of dark metal, and into the citadel. Their steps ring, and the sound of marching feet makes Mace think of the squad that arrived to negotiate. The huge clone at the front, the weapons just beyond Coruscant's defenses. The Republic has been at peace for 1,000 years, and there's nothing he would do to jeopardize that, but as they emerge into wide halls hung with the Super Commando Army banners and lit with lights that flicker like flames, Keeley slows, drops back to walk beside Mace. He's straight-backed, grimly set, and he doesn't glance over at Mace as he says, there's still time for you to call that other Jedi back before full dark, if you want someone here to witness. Thank you for the offer, Mace says evenly, but Depa has duties on the council that she has to see to. There's a pause, startled, and Keeley finally casts a glance at him. The Jedi who brought you is on the council, not a servant? We're a religious order. We don't have servants. The lack of knowledge about the Order isn't surprising. Even most people on Coruscant know very little about the Jedi. The Order feels large when Mace is in the midst of it, But there are only 10,000 Jedi. The clones outnumber them 1,000 to 1, and there are trillions of people on Coruscant alone. Keeley considers that for a moment, then says, almost sharp, "Your specification said you needed an area for your corpse." "The Service Corps aren't servants," Mace says evenly. "They're a branch of the Order devoted to the service of the galaxy at large, comprised of those with minor or no Force sensitivity, who believe in our tenets and initiates and Padawans who fail their training, but don't wish to return to their home planets and birth families."
"Oh," Keeley says after a moment, then tips his head. "Rex put Fordo in charge of finding a place for them. I'll tell him in the morning."
Mace inclines his head. There's no offer in there to let him find the location for the new temple, but unsurprising, he assumes. They're here under duress, not by choice.
"Has someone been chosen to oversee the temple on Ossus?" he asks. And it's hard to keep it steady, but he manages. Tra is part of the advance settlement there, trying to coax life back onto the scorched world. But when Mace left her on Coruscant, she was still trying to establish where the temple would be and not receiving answers. They can't do anything, can't move forward in any way without permission from the army. And with the clock ticking down on their time left in the Coruscant temple, the pressure to start weighs heavily. Keeley pauses, then touches the armor controls on his Vambrace. After a second, he says, "Commander Doom, it looks like. He'll be back in a few days, on a mission at the moment."
"Master Saw will be grateful to finally reach him," Mace says. "She's been collecting locations for potential settlements on Ossus, but we can't begin reclamation of areas without your approval."
It's not different, technically, than going through the Senate for approval. Mace is logical enough to know that. But all the same, having to ask permission when they've already been officially expelled from Coruscant is aggravating. "He'll get here," Keeley says, flat, clearly closing the subject. A pause, and then he says, "We have rooms set aside near the top of the building. You'll be expected to help prepare for the new temple and to help clean out some of the more dangerous areas of the city." All areas of Dromund Kaas are dangerous, Mace doesn't say. He just bows his head, accepting that, and glances up as they mount a wide, sweeping set of stairs into what's clearly the throne room. It's lit with violet and green beneath the more normal lights, an eerie wash of color beneath the clear ceiling, showing the lightning flashing through the dark clouds. And Mace feels the prickle of too many deaths here, ground into the Force, like a weight inside his chest. Here and on Ossus, he thinks, and it takes effort not to stop at the edge of the steps. So many deaths, ancient and inescapable. The Jedi are going to have to become very good at dealing with such things, very quickly. "Keeley," Rex says from ahead of them, and Keeley quickens his pace, falls in with Rex. Mace can't catch their conversation, even just a few paces behind them. Muted helmets, he assumes, and a private comm channel. It doesn't feel like anything alarming, though, or at least not any more so than the other parts of it, and he keeps moving, up the stairs and out into the throne room. There's an unfamiliar man sprawled out in a seat near the foot of the dais, unarmored, face bare, with a cuff around one arm that Mace knows, meant to limit movement in prisoners kept on home confinement or to a certain area. But he wouldn't have expected this man, of all of them, to be sporting it. Not here.
"Master Jedi," Jango says as they approach, and Mace meets dark eyes and inclines his head.
"Fett," he returns. "I'm surprised to see you here."
Another person, like Granta, that the Republic is desperately looking for right now. But apparently they aren't going to find him any more than they are the man who killed the Chancellor. Once, Mace would have believed it was his duty to send word back, or take them into custody himself.
But the order no longer answers to the Senate. All of those ties have been severed, and the Jedi have been stripped of their right to even live in their temple on Coruscant. Mace has only his duty to the Order and the new, unfamiliar weight of his duty to the Super Commando Army. "Family bonding time," Django says, sardonic, but neither Keely nor Rex so much as glance at him as they pass. Rex mounts the stairs to the throne, sinks into it with just the faintest edge of discomfort that says the motion is still unfamiliar, and Keely comes to a stop at the base, turns. "This is," Mace thinks grimly, "finally the time for him to fulfill his end of the bargain, apparently." He breathes out, then reaches up to draw his hood back, halting just a pace away from Keely. It's faintly jarring that Keely makes no move to take his helmet off, just glances up at Rex like he's waiting. Mace got to see the contract that signed all of the Republic's ties to the Order over to this faction of Mandalorians. There was nothing he could add, nothing he could alter, but he read it, late into the night, with Agen helping him parse all of the legalities. He wonders, now, if this is going to be another contract like that, or if all they need is the Mandalore's word. It's a formality, regardless. The order was handed off, and to halt an invasion that would have crippled the Republic, the Jedi had agreed, even knowing the terms. "Master Windu," Rex says, and it's stiff, a little cold. "You understand the terms of the Jedi's presence here?" Mace raises a brow, cool in return. "I was under the impression that the terms are whatever you set, Mandalore. You own every part of the Order." "You included, Jedi?" Django asks, his smirk a sharp thing for all the weight in his eyes. Neither Keely nor Rex acknowledges that, either. Rex just looks down for a long moment, then says, "Keely is the new head of the Jedi Order. You'll be married to him by Mandalorian custom and remain that way." It's likely meant to give some veneer of authority to the position, or maybe it's just to provide another layer of control. Mace has deliberately failed to mention that it won't really work, though. The Jedi have no traditions of marriages, and from what bits he's gleaned, it's not something the clones are overly familiar with either. A show of control more than the substance of it, Mace thinks, but he's not about to make this easier for the Mandalorians. "Of course," he says and looks at Keely, keeping his expression perfectly steady. "If it's by Mandalorian custom, I assume we exchange vambraces." Keely pauses. "Given that Jedi don't wear them, we can..." He stops, surprise flickering through him as Mace tugs up the sleeves of his robe, shows the leather bracers there. Agen's gift when Mace departed. And both of them had known precisely what Mace was walking into, given how closely they'd studied the contracts, had known that the order would follow, the council would separate, settle into a scheduled rotation, and they'd see each other again, but it had still felt like a farewell, a permanent change when Agen carefully bound the bracers around Mace's wrists, knowing what one of them was going to be used for. "Only leather," he says, meeting Keely's gaze. "But Jedi don't wear armor. This is our closest equivalent." Keely nods, short, and unstraps his vambrace without fanfare. It's mostly white, with a red streak running down the top of it, clearly added after the armor's creation rather than made with it. Carefully, Mace unlaces one of Agen's bracers, the hand-tooled leather still warm from his skin, and offers it out. Without looking at him, Keely takes his wrist, fastens the vambrace over Mace's forearm, the plastoid slick and cool. Mace tries not to think about how it is, in function, the exact same as the cuff Django is wearing, just placed on him with slightly more ceremony. Lacing the leather bracer around Keely's forearm takes a little more care, especially when Mace has to fit it over his remaining armor.
But Keeley stands perfectly still throughout the process, hardly seems to notice as Mace tugs the ties tight and does them up. Egan's favorite design of leaves and wild birds, traditional Iridonian motifs set inside the interlocking circles common to the Order's art, seems strange against the rest of Keeley's armor. Too wild. And Mace pulls the knot tight with a strange feeling rooting in his chest. When he looks up, a married man, Keeley has already turned his face away, and the darkness is settling in outside, as heavy as a shroud. Their rooms are at the very top of the citadel, on the western side of the building, with wide windows looking out over the rain and lightning and the ruined city. "Don't leave the buildings after dark," Keeley says, waving the lights on across the wide space. It's utilitarian, almost bare, the walls left uncomfortably, starkly empty of anything. Mace has spent as much time on missions as any Jedi, knows how to be far away from familiarity, but this time it's permanent, he thinks, and he doesn't know what will become of his homey quarters back at the temple, now packed into crates and ready to be moved when the Order leaves its home. Depa will oversee the moving because her rooms are close to his, but not the murals on the walls, the careful tiles in the kitchen that they laid together, a pattern of tangled vines halfway between Chalakdan rays of light and the sharply defined pillars of Harun Kal. Some of the grander art will be saved, carefully removed and transported, like the mosaic floor originally rescued from the temple on Ossus before its destruction, like the Uneti tree rooted deep in the courtyard. But so much won't be, and Mace is just tired. The Senate voted to remove any authority from the Jedi, then handed them over to prevent a war. And Mace is hurt, betrayed, angry, but most of all, he's tired. Before he can take one more step, though, a hand catches his arm right over the new bracer, and Keeley pulls him to a stop, tugs him around. "Jedi," he says, quietly frustrated. "I said, don't leave the building. Did you hear me?"
"I did," Mace says evenly, and frees his arm from Keeley's grip.
He doesn't do anything else, even though some part of him wants to tell Keeley not to grab him again.
"I have no plans to go out."
Keeley studies him for a moment, then nods shortly, steps back. He turns away, reaching up to pull his helmet off, and says,
"Your bedroom's through that door. Mine connects, but the middle door locks."
Mace inclines his head, watching Keeley. His hair has a reddish cast, just a touch of auburn against the usual black, and Mace can see the edge of a red-brown tattoo that curls beneath the neck of his bodysuit. When he turns, finally, to face Mace fully, it's almost a relief how different he looks from Jango. Hair clipped close to the scalp and intricately shaved, beard neatly trimmed. All the clones feel different in the Force, to the point that seeing Jango's face on each one is jarring. But Keeley's face is as different as he feels. It makes Mace wonder if the clones who came to negotiate with the Senate were deliberately making themselves look identical, to drive home what they were. But he can't say either way. "In the morning, I'll show you the options we have for the temple's place," Keeley says, and raises a hand like he's going to run it over his hair. The sight of Mace's bracer makes him hesitate, falter for just a second, and he takes a breath, turns away again, and moves across the wide, empty room toward the huge window. "Just keep to where it's light until the sun rises." The repetition of the warning sticks, like barbs in Mace's skin. Rex said it too, was focused on getting inside before night fell. Dromund Kaas is a dangerous world, but something about this feels different. Hits differently, maybe. Mace weighs it, turns it over in his head, files it away for later consideration.
"Should I leave the lights on up here?" he asks. Keeley nods. Just in the main room, he says, and then pauses, like he doesn't know what to do. His gaze drags around the room, and on his helmet, his fingers tighten, gauntlets creaking. Mace can understand the roil of feelings that rises in him, though. They're married, and everything feels strange, ill-fitting, awkward. Mace has never been a diplomat, and he's never had the patience for small talk, but this he can offer. He slides his small pack off from beneath his outer robe, then removes the robe itself, moving to hang it beside the door. There's an armor stand in another corner, a cleaning kit left on the ground beside it. Clear signs of Keeley's occupation here, even if he hasn't changed anything about the space. And something in that makes it easier for Mace to say, "The temple will need to have space for a large garden, both for meditation and for growing food crops. The agricultural corps will also need space to establish greenhouses and cultivate gardens, hydroponic, preferably, and scattered across the city." Keeley's breath is a quiet relief, and he takes the topic gladly. "If they can build vertically, there should be plenty of buildings to pick from. We'll help with our food supply, too. We've been living on protein rations, mostly." Mace isn't overly surprised to hear that, given the state of the city. He collects the pads he brought, turning to find a place to spread them out, and there isn't much of one. But there's a small table in the corner beside the kitchen, a handful of chairs around it, and a pad and a cup of calf left out, cold now. Leaving it where it is, Mace sets the pad and the projector down, and Keeley moves the cup absently, triggering the projector with a touch. The schematics for a standard AgriCorps hydroponics garden rises, and Mace flicks his fingers, changing it to an interior view so Keeley can see the mechanisms. "Here," he says. "I was told to deliver this to your engineers, so they'll know what equipment the AgriCorps is bringing. They're also asking for laboratory space, preferably to be shared with the Archaeological and Research Division." Keeley nods, striking his own pad closer, and tugging it open to make notes. "Water shouldn't be a problem here," he says, faintly dry. "Can all four branches of the Corps share research space?"
"Technically, yes," Mace answers, and doesn't try to hide his grimace. "But unless you're willing to mediate 10 conflicts a day on average, I'd advise putting the AgriCorps and the Mech Corps as far apart as the city limits will allow."
Keeley winces. "We had them right next to each other, but I'll change it." Mace snorts quietly.
"You'll sleep far better without all the explosions."
"Like Rancor and Delta sharing space," Keeley mutters, but he makes a note, sinking down into the open chair beside him. After a moment, Mace sits down as well, even though it leaves his back towards the wide window. The back of his neck prickles, like there are eyes on him. But when he turns around to look, all he can see outside is the lightning-split darkness, muted by the pounding rain.
"My old friend," Dooku says, and his hand is cold and clammy on Mace's arm, a weight like iron as he steps closer, tall and looming and perfectly steady. In the light from above, his eyes glow yellow, and all Mace can feel from him is darkness.
"Dooku," he returns, but doesn't move.
Dooku's smile is a thin thing, and there's something in his face that settles like wrongness in Mace's senses.
"I was right about the Senate, Mace. You never did want to see the truth."
"I saw the truth just fine," Mace says,
and steps back, away from Dooku's hand.
"I was willing to work to make things better, though."
Displeasure flickers across Dooku's face, and he takes a step closer, then another. Around them, stone walls lean, shadows writhing over their surfaces.
"I worked, Mace. I worked for years with no result. The system is corrupt, and the Jedi are passively corrupt."
"You say that," Mace says,
and there's a thread of anger in his chest that's been there since Dooku told him his reasons for walking away.
But the Jedi are the ones helping the galaxy. What are you doing for the people who need help, sitting in your ancestral castle on Serrano? The lights flicker and Dooku smiles. It's an expression that would be home on a monster, on a Sith. I've changed the course of the world, Mace. It isn't too late for you to join me. He holds out a hand, and around them there's a howling, like a vast wind. Somewhere else, a voice is shouting, but Mace can't make out the words. I wouldn't leave with you before. I'd hardly do it now, Mace says, unmoved, and steps back. Stone gives beneath his heel, and he lurches, breath jolting from his lungs. A sword, hands with jeweled gauntlets, dark power like corrosive acid washing into Mace's lungs. The blade swings, and Mace throws himself backwards off the broken edge of stone, tumbles backwards through empty air as lightning splits the sky in two. Mace wakes to complete darkness and the sound of screaming. He's out of bed and moving before he even has the chance to think, at the door before the lights in the main room even come on. There's fear and pain below him, and he snatches his robe, his lightsaber off his belt, and hits the hallway at a run. The cry comes again, a snap surge of terror from multiple sides, grief that rises, a helpless sort of frustration, and Mace shoves out through a balcony door, vaults the railing, and drops. Far, far below, a light flickers on, one desperate beacon in the darkness. In the glow, Mace can just make out shapes, seething shadows rising, one much smaller body in white armor, a clone on the ground and scrambling back, one leg dragging, and in front of him a creature looms, like a rancor but much smaller, with protruding spines and huge claws as it swings. Mace hits the ground hard, right between the beast and the clone, violet light shattering the shadows as the creature's claws meet the blade of his lightsaber. It recoils with a snarl, and Mace ducks a second blow, looks for the shatter point in its defenses, finds the gap. He lunges close, raises a hand to slam the beast back into the wall as his blade blocks another swing. The force twists, slides off the creature's hide, and with a jolt that runs through him, Mace finally registers precisely what it is, but Terran tactics haven't been seen in any number in centuries, he thinks, and only just manages to leap aside in time. Poison claws score deep into the earth, and Mace whirls, reverses his blade as the opening comes, and severs the beast's forearm at the elbow with one hard blow. The Terran tactic howls, throws itself at Mace like an avalanche of poisoned spines, but Mace doesn't move. He sets his feet, watches it bear down on him, and then ducks, comes up, lightsaber leading, and drives his blade straight up through its belly. Then drops and rolls before the spines on its tail can catch him. With a bellow, the Terran tactic goes down, and Mace rolls up onto one knee, catches his breath, looks up. He can feel the life deserting the beast, and with a satisfied breath, he rises, deactivating his blade. Jedi killers, he thinks. He'll have to warn the rest of the council, have them prepare the masters. Terran tactics feed on the blood of Force sensitives when they can get it, and if they're inhabiting Kaas City, they'll need to be wiped out before Padawans and Knights can be allowed out alone. Out in the darkness, something howls, and Mace pauses, turns his head, feels, for one vivid instant, as though there's a figure just beyond his line of sight, back in the dark. Mace stiffens, and the sense of eyes on him is a tangible thing, a threat. Shadows shift. From the opposite direction, something surges forward as the clone cries out, hits him hard. Mace goes down, feels vicious teeth rip into his arm and twists, drives a bare foot into the Vornskr's stomach, a fist into its jaw, and hurls it free and straight into stone. It hits with a squeal, and Mace twists to his feet, grabs for his lightsaber again. The second one snarls as it lunges, and Mace twists to the side, takes its head off with one sharp blow, and catches the first one with the force, hurling it over the side of the building and out into the tangled trees. Another howl rises, and Mace grimaces, leaps. He lands beside the clone as he's scrambling up, pulls him all the way to his feet, and then drags an arm over his shoulder. Hang on to me, he orders and jumps. There's an archway above that he kicks off of, launching them straight up into the air. And then the edge of another balcony, a spire, another arch. Above them are minds, alarmed and concerned, and Mace aims for them, redirects off another arch, and then flips up and over as the trooper yelps. They land hard on the balcony, and Mace lets go of him and glances back. No other clones are out, he thinks. The light he saw, a spotlight from an upper window, has gone out, and he can only just make out the collapsed bulk of the Terentactic like a darker shadow far below. Master Windu! A voice says, and then, Jesse! Rex, the trooper says with relief, and staggers forward a step. Rex grabs him, hauls him in, and hugs him, and Jesse hugs back, hangs on. Rex's desperation and relief is as clear as a bell, and Mace looks them over for a moment, a flicker of warmth in his chest, then turns away, takes a step. Keely is in the doorway, breathless, in nothing but his black undersuit and a thigh holster, and he's staring at Mace like it's his first time seeing him.
Apologies, Keely, Mace says, bland, for disobeying you on our wedding night. I thought it was best to ask forgiveness rather than permission.
Keely starts, and then stops. He looks down towards the dead creatures, and then says, We've never been able to kill one before. Blaster bolts just bounce off. Mace inclines his head.
Terentactics are Jedi killers and products of Sith alchemy. They're very difficult for anyone but a team of Jedi to deal with.
There's a pause, and then Keely says, That makes you a one-man team? Faintly amused, Mace just raises a brow.
I'm master of the order, he says,
and passes Keely, heading back up towards their apartment. He's dripping blood on the floor, and it's minorly irritating. Before he can make it more than a few steps, though, there's a hand on his arm, pulling him back around. Wait, Keely says, just a little sharp. It was just, you saw that spined thing. Was there anything else down there? Mace pauses, a little startled, and considers Keely for a moment.
Vornskers, he says,
and when irritation flickers across Keely's face, just a trace of it, he shakes his head.
Beyond them, I saw nothing, but the darkness here is heavy, like a shroud.
There's a long second's pause before Keely loosens his grip, lets go. He takes a step back, still watching Mace, and then turns sharply, heading back towards Jesse and Rex. To one of the guards, he says, Get Kix up here. Warn him he's going to be spending the night with Jesse, and double the guard. Sir, the trooper says, and then he's gone, jogging past Mace and back into the building. Mace lingers for another second, that eerie edge of awareness in the dark still with him, that reaction sticking like a hidden thorn. Wrong, something whispers. But everything has been wrong since Mace stepped into the hall and found the Chancellor dead, and he doesn't know where the whisper is coming from or what it's about. There's blood dripping down his arm, staining the dark stone beneath his feet, and Mace breathes in, breathes out, tightens a hand around his lightsaber, and keeps moving. It feels as though the darkness is watching, and on Dromund Kaas, Mace is sure that it's true. Morning on Dromund Kaas is a more vague lightening of the surrounding darkness than any sort of lifting of it. But it comes early, bringing with it a return of the rain as well. Mace rebandages his shoulder in the low light of his bedroom, meditates, performs his usual katas with a little more care than normal. The Vornsker's teeth left a mark, but manageable. Mace has dealt with worse. When he emerges from his bedroom, Keely is sitting alone at the table, stripped down to loose sleeping pants, with a pot of calf at his elbow and a pad in front of him. Not paperwork, but a truly terrible campy novel
featuring one writer's wild misconceptions about the Jedi Order, and one of the raunchiest covers Mace has ever seen this side of outright erotic art. Mace knows because Depa was delighted by it, took great glee in sprawling across Mace's couch while he was attempting to work, and reading passages aloud to him with dramatic flair. That was not even a week before the Super Commando Army appeared out of the hyperlanes, Mace thinks. It feels like years ago, somehow.
I hope, he says dryly, and Keely startles hard, that you're not conducting research with that book. There are some glaring factual inaccuracies.
Quickly, Keely puts down the pad, rises. Mace, he says, then pauses, like he's not sure he should use Mace's name. When Mace just raises an eyebrow at him, not about to protest, he steels himself and then takes a step forward.
You're all right, he says, hesitates, then offers. You were hurt last night. Grazes, Mace allows. I'm fine. Jesse?
Keely breathes out, then smiles crookedly. Just fine. He was trying to pull up a cadet who'd fallen over the side of a balcony and fell himself, but he's just bruised. Mace inclines his head, moving around to take one of the open chairs. Before he can even reach for the calf, Keely has it, and he pours Mace a cup, sets it in front of him so he doesn't have to reach for it.
Thank you,
Mace says, and cradles the mug in both hands, warming his fingers as he takes his first sip. It's strong, undoctored, and Mace breathes in the steam and closes his eyes, appreciating the familiar ritual even here. With a quiet scrape of the chair, Keely sinks back down in his seat, shifting the pad to the side. No problem, he says, and there's a thoughtful, considering note to it. Amusement, too, when Mace finally opens his eyes. You know that book? On sight? Mace snorts.
Depa, my former Padawan, is very fond of the genre of romance novels that feature interpretations of the Jedi, he says, dry. That one is her current favorite. I don't recommend it for an accurate look at our order, however.
Keely chuckles, refilling his own cup. I figured, seeing as you don't wear bondage gear under your robes, he says with humor.
As penance for the sins of the galaxy.
With a sigh, Mace closes his eyes, aggrieved, remembering Depa's dramatic reading of that reveal. Keely outright laughs at that, a warm thing, and Mace looks into his new husband's face and thinks, for the first time, that maybe this won't be the terrible trial he'd thought. So I'm guessing that means you don't have elaborate sex rituals to gain more power either, Keely says.
Assumptions, Mace says gravely, can get you into trouble.
Keely raises his brows, leaning back in his chair.
Really?
He says. What about the orgies then?
I suppose you'll find out, seeing as we're married and any orgy invitations will have to be addressed jointly.
Mace offers dryly.
Have you reached the part with the aphrodisiacs yet?
Aphrodisiacs? No! Keely reaches for the book again with interest, then pauses like he's been caught, wavers, and says, I found it while I was looking up real information, and it looked
like a speeder wreck, Mace supplies, between two terrible people, so you feel no inclination to help, just watch.
Yeah, Keely says, grinning. Exactly that.
I can recommend others if you'd like, Mace says dryly. Depa has made lists, and she's forced me to listen to all of them.
Keely chuckles, picking up the pad and flipping to the next page. I don't mind a little research, he says, and Mace sighs through his nose, making Keely laugh. The simple sort of truce of the morning manages to last all the way through a trek across the city in the rain, inspecting potential locations for the new temple with one of the other clone captains. Three of the four aren't quite large enough, particularly when the majority of the archive is going to be hosted on Drum and Cass. But even though the Fourth is, it feels overwhelmingly wrong the moment Mace sets foot on the grounds. The attempt to explain that is the end of easiness between them, though. Wrong? Keely repeats, a thread of frustration in his voice. Why is it wrong? There's no fault line here, and no one working nearby has reported anything strange. Mace just shakes his head. Not here, he says, and it's not an emotion that can be put into words. The same way the sacred spire feels like home, this feels like the opposite. And just the thought of living here turns Mace's stomach. It's the largest of the sites, Fordo points out, though he's largely kept out of things until now. If you want anything this size, it's going to have to be near the Citadel. Mace had been hoping for a site on the outskirts of Kos City, somewhere close to the walls of the gorge and the forest beyond it, but anything that isn't here seems like a good option.
Acceptable. Something here isn't right or friendly.
It's a plot of land, Keely says, faintly annoyed. But he trudges back through the mud to reach their speeder, hauling himself up into it with a sigh. Two more near the keep? Three, Fordo corrects, checking his list. Keely grimaces, halfway through pulling his helmet off, and Fordo chuckles. Come on, kid, it's your honeymoon. Smile! My boots are wet, Keely retorts, like Carkin Camino, but with more mud. Mace catches the name, though it doesn't mean anything to him. Camino could be a planet, the origin of the clones, he thinks. And the flicker of instinct to dig rises, but there's no one to report it to. The Jedi don't serve the Republic anymore. They serve the Super Commando Army. Strange to feel that realization settle all over again, heavy as a stone in Mace's chest.
I would caution anyone working near here to be careful, he says,
looking back towards the spot, even if the turn of emotion in his chest is more complicated than that.
There may be something buried, or a coming disaster.
I'll make a note, Keely says, though he still doesn't sound overly impressed. He checks his comm, then frowns and says, Rex needs me back at the Citadel. We'll have to finish another day. Fordo, can you drop Mace on our balcony? Sure, Fordo says with equanimity. Short honeymoon, I guess. The turn of Keely's emotions is something annoyed, tired. You only know what a honeymoon is because of Rex's trashy holos. The speeder lifts off, Drummond Cass's ever-present lightning cracking the sky around them. But Mace can't quite draw his gaze away from the plot of land behind them. It's mostly cleared, marshy ground and leaning trees, and the edge of a river in the distance, but just for an instant, he thinks he sees a figure in the shadows beside one of the trees. Almost familiar. Almost someone he knows. Then the lightning shatters overhead once more, spinning the shadows out, and the figure is gone. The feeling of someone else's distress wakes Mace from uneasy dreams. For a moment, he lies in bed, staring at the ceiling like he's trying to catch his breath. Below him, levels down, someone is terrified. Someone is in pain and someone is raging, their fury like a black cloud. The worry rises, crests into fear, and Mace breathes in, slides out of bed, and picks his lightsaber up from the bedside table. Keely's room is empty. He was still gone when Mace went to sleep, and he hasn't returned despite how late the hour is. 10 levels down, he thinks, and ignores the door in favor of the balcony. It's after midnight, the lights of the city sieged by an impenetrable rainy darkness, and when he steps out, a cold wind is rising, moaning over the ruined buildings and new construction. The city is deathly silent, but below, someone is so angry that the force bends around them, the dark side like a black hole drawing everything else in. Light, quick, Mace pulls his sleeping shirt a little closer around himself, then vaults over the balcony railing. There's another below theirs, offset,
and Mace lands on the rail, leaps to the next one down. He skips the next few entirely, just lets himself drop a half dozen stories before he lands lightly on another terrace. The door back into the building opens with a pass of his hand, and he pushes through into a hallway that's lit to an almost blinding level. Startled, he pauses. A flicker of shadow, obscene against all the light. A man in armor that eats the brilliance, but there's an image underneath that jars through Mace's chest like familiarity. Ahead of him, there's a cry, a shout. A body surges forward straight towards the shadowed man in armor, and another body lunges. Keely, in full armor, tackles Jesse to the ground, but Jesse is fighting like a thing possessed, clawing and twisting and snarling curses. He heaves Keely to the side, straight into a wall, and turns, bolting straight for the shadow. Mace ignites his blade, and there's a jerk. The armored man turns, suddenly, vividly real, and like an afterimage, like a holographic display that's just a second too slow in motion, Mace catches a glimpse of what's beneath. Dooku's face stares at him, shrunken, gaunt, and Mace's breath catches in his lungs. He freezes, and like in his dream, there's a sword in the armored man's grip, swinging. It meets the blade of Mace's lightsaber with a crackling hiss, and Mace turns, spots the weakest point in an unfamiliar defense, and drives his elbow into the man's ribs. Armor buckles, and the whole image of the man shudders. Dooku staggers, or the man does, and outside the wind howls. "Mace!" Keely shouts, but Mace can't answer, disengages their blades with a snarling side of plasma against metal that shouldn't be holding, and ducks the sweep of it as he leaps back. The doubled image advances, growing, looming, but when it swings, Mace can see the flaw, twists aside and parries and slams the man back into the stone. A body hits him, knocking him into the wall, and from right against his skin, a blaster fires. Mace wrenches, not able to stop the cry that escapes him, and Jesse slams the butt of a blaster into his face, sends blackness washing across his vision. In the same moment, behind him, above him, the armored man raises a hand, jeweled gauntlets sparkling, and the force bends. Mace has a half second to pick an opponent, and he takes the more dangerous one without hesitation. Jesse swings again, but Mace throws him back down the hall and out of the way, and lunges to grab his lightsaber. It leaps back to his fingers, reigniting in a wash of violet light, and Mace rolls, throws. The blade whirls through the air, and Dooku's eyes go wide. The man's eyes go wide. They jerk back, and all the lights in the building flicker, dim, crackle. When they burn back to life, the man and Dooku are both gone. Mace stops his lightsaber with a thought, breath coming hard. He curls forward, pressing a hand to his side, and closes his eyes. It's been years since he was last shot, he thinks, and then forces himself up to sitting, catching his blade as it flies back to him. He'd forgotten how much it hurt, and the whole world feels distant, unsteady. "Mace," Keely says, and he's on the ground next to Mace, one hand over Mace's on the wound. "Mace, can you hear me?" Worry, Mace thinks. Too much worry. He grits his teeth, takes Keely's warmth and uses it as a focus point, dragging himself back under control. Nods and feels the rush of Keely's relief, as bright as a star, as Mace looks up. Behind him, a trooper in blue-painted armor marked with red patches is grabbing Jesse, but Mace raises a hand before he can use the hypo in his grip. "Wait," he says, rough, and Jesse looks up, meets his eyes with horror. "Master Windu," he says, and scrambles up. "I swear I didn't think. I don't know." Mace shakes his head. "You were being controlled," he says, and slants a glance at Keely, even as an arm curls around his neck. Easy to remember now. The, "You're all right," that came first yesterday morning, even before the concern about Mace's wound. And how adamant Keely and Rex both were that no one go out at night. "This is why no one leaves the light after dark." Keely grimaces, pulling his helmet off and setting it beside him. "Anyone who does catches its attention," he says grimly. "They keep disappearing." A Sith, Mace thinks. and shifts to let the medic get at his side. Some kind of Sith ghost, maybe, or remnant, and beneath it, Dooku. Like in Mace's dream, even though Dooku is supposed to be halfway across the Outer Rim in his family's palace. "The other man," he says, and his breath catches hard in his lungs as the medic presses hard against the wound. Keely's grip tightens and Mace leans into him, squeezing his eyes shut. "Beneath the image of the Sith Lord, do you know him?" There's a pause, and then Keely says, a little raw, "Yeah, he's the one who created us. He bought the clones. Darth Tyrannus." "Old friend," Mace thinks, and it's tired, pained. He grits his teeth on an involuntary sound as the medic applies a patch, and Keely finds his hand, grips it tightly. Mace curls his fingers around Keely's in return, breathes out, and asks, "You brought him here as a prisoner, didn't you? Like Django?" Keely is silent for a long moment, and then takes a breath. "Yeah," he says. "They made us. They tortured us. We grabbed them when we got free. Not that it worked with the Sith." Mace can't help the breath of amusement. Tired, but real. "No," he says. "I can't imagine it did. Particularly here."
"We know that now," Keely says, and then, "Kix?"
"He'll make it to medical," Kix says, not looking up. "Rex, get Jesse. He needs to spend the night there, too. Keely?"
"I've got Mace," Keely agrees, and rises, carefully easing Mace up with him as Rex and the two other clones approach. He hesitates, but Rex nods to him shortly.
"Cody's got everyone on alert," he says.
"And Locke will cover the rest of the night. Go."
"Thanks," Keely says,
and drags Mace's arm over his shoulder. Pauses and then says, a little brusque,
"You shouldn't be alone tonight. Not everyone who goes out in the dark gets grabbed, but having someone around makes it less likely, usually."
"Maybe," Mace says gravely. "You should find another research book."
A laugh cracks out of Keely's throat, and his arm tightens around Mace's chest. "I'll read it to you," he offers, and helps Mace stagger forward, unsteady on the dark stone. There are only a few hours left to the night when they finally make it back to their apartment, and Mace can feel it like a veil lifting, approaching across the dawn. He's tired, aching, but it's almost dawn, and Keely is beneath his arm, holding him up and steady. "Criff," Keely mutters, waving the door shut behind them. "That was a long night." He steers Mace to one of the open chairs, then steps back, starts stripping off his armor with practiced speed. And it's still night. Mace is entirely in agreement, and he leans back against the wall, watches as Keely settles his armor on the stand.
"Once the council arrives, we should be able to hunt Dooku down," he says. "Alone, I might not win a fight, depending on what Sith Lord's shadow he's carrying."
"Nasty one," Keely says, but it's tired more than anything. "That was the first time I've seen it clearly, though, when you were fighting it." He looks at his armor for a moment, then turns, meets Mace's eyes across the space between them.
"I know it's almost morning, but you still shouldn't be alone."
"You need sleep," Mace counters, mild. "You didn't sleep earlier."
Keely concedes that with the tip of his head, rubbing a hand over his short beard. He sighs, eyes sliding shut, and says,
"I know it's just names on paper, the marriage, but we can share a bed just for tonight."
Mace pauses, a little surprised by the offer.
"You seem to have hated every part of this so far," he says after a moment,
and Keely grimaces, looking away.
"We had to get the Jedi away from the Senate," he says. "We couldn't. All of you were in danger. You were just toys to them, like we were to Tyrannus. There were plans Granta found, and we couldn't leave you there, so we took you.
But it's not what you would have picked, and this marriage isn't what you would have picked. It takes Mace a moment to pick that apart, another to digest the meaning. The order was in danger, he says, careful. Sentiment in the Senate had been turning against them, he knows that, but outright danger is hard to comprehend. The Jedi Order is a religious sect, an order of monks called to the galaxy's service. People thinking that they're any sort of force enough to pose a threat is highly misguided. Keely snorts, leaning against the edge of the table to face Mace squarely. It was, he says. We rebelled on Kamino almost a year ago, and then we kept an eye on things. Granta found the plans. More oversight, more control by the Senate, and then some kind of engineered excuse, a reason to wipe you out. He hesitates, looking down at Mace, and his eyes were dark in the low light, but the fingers that touched Mace's are impossibly gentle. We grew up thinking we were made for the Jedi. We couldn't just let you die. Made for the Jedi. Those words anchor themselves in Mace's lungs, and he closes his eyes, turns his hand over, lacing his fingers with Keely's, and there's still so much to unravel, so much to do. Clones to find and Dooku to hunt down and arrangements to make, but come to bed, Keely, he says, quiet. And Keely uses their tangled hands to pull Mace to his feet and back towards the closest bedroom. The quiet chime of his calm wakes Mace long after the sun has risen. The rain has stopped, and there's a luminous glow outside the window, light across the ruined city. Mace reaches for his calm, clumsy with the languid weight of sleep, and checks the message, then snorts, drops it back to the bedside table without responding. Keely makes a quiet sound of protest, tucked right against his skin, and his arm tightens around Mace's chest. He's a warm weight in the late morning glow, and Mace settles back against him, feels the scrape of Keely's beard, and contains a shiver. I'm not moving, he says, stroking the back of Keely's hand with light fingers. Good, Keely says, rough, and tugs Mace back, warm breath against the back of his neck. Problem? Mace closes his eyes, unable to fight the curve of a smile. Depa, she has a new list of books for you. Keely huffs, but Mace can feel an answering smile, hidden against his skin. You mean for us? I do, Mace allows, amused, and Keely breathes out, breathes in, and tangles their fingers together tightly. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic and would like to leave feedback, you are more than welcome to do so. If you'd like to leave feedback for me, you can find the podfic post probably wherever you found this podfic to begin with. And if you'd like to leave feedback for the author, you can find a link to the text post in that podfic post. Thanks for listening. Oh my gosh, my voice. I will be able to do an amazing... What is happening to my voice? I'll be able to do an amazing Din
voice. Later, maybe. I should record some John and Tilly's podfic right now. Because, wow, my voice is just fucked.